WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books. No due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 18th of January, 2023. My name is Arthur. I'm going to go ahead and kind of piggyback on how I concluded the show last week with it was more of a comedy number than some music. Play too much music here on the grand hour. And this is something that's always fascinated me. This next program. It's the Columbia Workshop. It's called Scoring for Radio, the Vocabulary of Sound. Had an original air date of the 7th of November, 1936. Thanks for listening.
Columbia Workshop.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Deems Taylor speaking. As most of you probably know, the Columbia Broadcasting System has just commissioned six American composers to write six orchestral works designed primarily to be heard over the radio. Two of them, Aaron Copland and Roy Harris, are in the studio tonight. And the other four, Louis Greenbelt, Howard Hanson, Walter Piston, and William Grant Still are listening in. They are listening because this broadcast is not only for your enjoyment, but also for their information. We want to show them something. I'll explain just what it is that we want to show them, and you, after you've heard the first number on tonight's program, an orchestral arrangement of one of a group of pieces that the great French composer Claude Debussy wrote for his little daughter, called The Children's Corner. This particular piece, played by the Columbia Symphony Orchestra under Howard Barlow, is The Gollywog's Cakewalk. What you have just heard is Debussy's Gollywog's Cakewalk, scored for the average symphony orchestra for performance in the average concert hall. What we want to show you and the six composers of the Columbia Commission is that besides the tonal effects produced by traditional symphonic orchestration, there exists today a vast treasury of tone colors invented and developed by radio orchestras with which the average symphonic composer is unfamiliar. Perhaps I'd better define tone color. It's the effect upon the ear produced by combinations of instruments. For example, the sound of a number of stringed instruments, violins, violas, cellos, and basses playing together is one tone color. The sound of a group of brass instruments playing together is another. And the sound of woodwinds, flutes, clarinets, oboes, bassoons, still another. Besides these simple tone colors, there are others, more complicated and more subtle, produced by combining instruments of different families and by altering the manner in which the instruments are played. Now, radio, as I say, has produced a large variety of tone colors that are as yet unused in serious music. This development came about in a very natural way. The bulk of the music that you hear on your radio set is, for better or worse, dance music. Now, the average dance number is played on a broadcast or in a nightclub, consists of one popular tune, that is, a strain of 8, 16, or 24 bars, repeated over and over. In order to counteract the monotony of this endless repetition, The radio or jazz band arranger tricks your ear by shifting the tune to various keys or by playing it in various ingenious new combinations of instruments. Some of these combinations and effects are produced by variations in methods of playing. Others owe their existence to the peculiar mechanical conditions of broadcasting, whereby, owing to the fact that a player can step up close to the microphone with the rest of the orchestra in the background, he can produce solo effects that would be ineffective or even inaudible if played in a concert hall. Up to now, most of these new tone colors have never been used in serious music, and we think they might be. And so tonight, we're going to play you three familiar compositions by three great masters. First in conventional symphonic orchestration, and then as rescored by a master of modern radio technique, Amadeo De Filippi. You have already heard part of the Gollywog's Cakewalk in the official orchestration by Mouton. And now before Mr. Barlow conducts Mr. Filippi's version, let me show you a few of his orchestral effects and the way they're produced. Early in the piece, for example, comes a brief passage for saxophones and bassoon, in which the instruments are blown in a peculiar way known as slap-tonguing, answered by the brass instruments, trumpets and trombones, played with what are called wah-wah mutes. A few bars further on, we have a slap-tongued saxophone carrying the air, accompanied by violins and a slow glissando, that is, a sliding up and down the scale with no perceptible break between the notes. Now the saxophones take the melody, followed by the flutes and clarinets against a background of saxophones and brasses playing flutter-tonguing. This last is a method of playing wind instruments whereby the player vibrates his tongue rapidly, very much as you do when you're cold, you know, and you say brrr. Next, the trumpet plays the melody, the player alternately opening and closing the bell of the instrument with the palm of his hand. At the end of the passage, something that an old-time symphony player would claim to be impossible, a trumpet glissando. And now a short passage for woodwind and horns with a plucked string accompaniment. Any symphonic composer would write this, but what he wouldn't write is the ingenious rhythmic effect produced by the little wooden percussion instrument known as Chinese woodblocks or temple blocks. The last four bars are unusual. A glissando for the harp, followed by a glissando for clarinet and kettle drums. Two effects that, as any old school symphony player will tell you, are impossible. Now that we've analyzed a few of the effects, suppose we hear the whole piece. Debussy's Gollywog's Cakewalk, scored for radio orchestra by Amadeo De Filippi and conducted by Howard Barlow. Thank you. Now that we've heard a grotesque number, let's see what the radio orchestra can do with the lyric work. But before we get into that, let me go a little more fully into one effect that occurred at the very end of the Gollywog's Cakewalk, the timpani glissando. The timpani, or kettle drums, as they've existed in the symphony orchestra for nearly two centuries, are the only instruments of the drum family that produce a definite note that can actually be tuned. This tuning is done by tightening a series of screws around the head of the instrument, and as there are eight of these screws, the tuning process naturally takes time. If you've been to a symphony concert, you've probably noticed the kettle drum player at the back of the orchestra apparently smelling his instrument during the soft passages. He isn't smelling them, he's tuning up and putting his ear close to the drum to see if he has the note right. And owing to this laborious process of tuning, there are usually three kettle drums in a symphony orchestra. Now, in recent years, an instrument has appeared on the market known as the pedal kettle drum, in which the instrument is tuned instantly, not by tightening screws, but by the pressure of the player's foot on a pedal placed at the base of the instrument. You won't find many of them in symphony orchestras, but almost every broadcasting station has one. On this new instrument, the player, for example, if he wants to play the notes F and C, instead of needing two drums, one tuned in F and one tuned in C, can play both notes on one instrument, like this. Not only that, but he can play a whole scale on one drum. Or he can play a chromatic passage, glissando, like this. Now that's what radio has done for one instrument of the orchestra. Another thing, of the three pieces we're playing this evening, two were written originally not for orchestra but for piano. Now we made this choice deliberately for the simple reason that we didn't want to seem to be criticizing the orchestral technique of the master we're playing. We didn't want to seem to be saying, this is how Debussy would have written for the orchestra if he'd known his business. He knew his business. All we want to suggest is that there are some new orchestral tone colors available in addition to those that already exist. We don't want to create a new musical language. We only wish, with all respect, to add a few new words to the existing vocabulary. Now, suppose we take our lyric piece. Robert Schumann's well-loved Tournoi, played first in Theodore Moses' arrangement for string orchestra, conducted by Howard Barlow. Now let's see what Mr. DeFilippi does with Tormelai. He scores the opening phrase for brass, playing with cup mute. First, let me show you how the passage sounds as played with straight mute, the ordinary mute used by all symphony players. ¶¶ Now, here's the same passage, played by the brass, using a mute that is familiar to all radio orchestras, the cup mute. Now comes a passage played by a solo trombone using a cup mute and answered by another trombone using what is known as a Harmon mute. Further on, we hear the opening phrase again, this time played by a quartet of saxophones. They're answered by the brass section, this time using still another variety of mute known as the solo tone mute. By the way, I'm assuming that you know that a mute for a brass instrument is a metal or fiber appliance that is thrust into the bell of the instrument, which lessens the volume of sound, but as you've heard, alters the quality of the sound. These different varieties of brass mutes are one of the important contributions to music made by the American jazz band and radio orchestra. Now we come to another effect, one that belongs solely to radio, the subtone clarinet. This is a tone produced by a peculiar method of blowing the instrument, which in a concert hall would be almost inaudible at a distance of, 15 feet, thanks to the fact that in a broadcasting studio, the player can stand within a foot of the microphone. The tone is perfectly audible, even with an accompaniment of brass instruments, as you hear now. Now we have an effect that is seldom heard in concert, a solo for the double bass in its highest register. And now suppose we hear the whole piece. Schumann's Träumerei, as scored for radio by Amadeo De Filippi, and played by the Columbia Symphony Orchestra under Howard Barlow. Let me make one comment and explanation. It may seem to some of you that these arrangements of Mr. DeFilippi's are almost too elaborate, and that the effects, some of them lasting only 3 or 4 bars, tread upon each other's heels so fast that the final result is almost too colorful, too rich. Well, that may be so, but let me remind you that tonight you're not at a concert. You're in a laboratory. Mr. DeFilippi is trying to show you and our 6 composers what can be done, not necessarily what should be done all the time. If we succeed in giving you some idea of the resources of the modern radio orchestra, we shall have accomplished what we set out to do. And now for our 3rd number, the Farandole from Georges Bizet's La Lesienne suite. Here's part of it as Bizet wrote it. Now let us see how a modern radio arranger translates this music into orchestral terms. First is the opening theme played by the strings col legno. This is a method of playing whereby the musician taps the strings with the wood of the bow. It's an effect frequently written for the concert hall but seldom heard because the listener hears all bows and no notes. In the studio with the players near the microphone, the notes are, as you hear now, perfectly distinguishable. Now a passage for trumpets, played with still another mute, known as the gabbo mute. The tone produced by this mute is almost too delicate for the concert hall, but is perfectly effective through the microphone. It is accompanied by strings playing pizzicato glissando, that is, plucked with a sliding tone comparable to that produced by a Hawaiian steel guitar. Next, a passage for brass instruments using cup mutes, this time playing short, detached notes. Now the brass is playing without mutes, but with felt hats hung over the bells of the instruments. Here's one solo that would be very difficult to make effective on the concert stage, but which is very much so over the microphone. A bassoon playing in its low register against an accompaniment of high muted strings and celeste. And now let's hear the whole thing. The Farandole from Bizet's Arlesienne Suite, rescored for radio by Amadeo De Filippi with profound apologies to Georges Bizet and played by the Columbia Symphony Orchestra under the direction of Howard Barlow.
Tonight, the Columbia Workshop has brought you a special broadcast demonstrating the use of orchestral instruments developed by radio. The program was called to the special attention of the six American composers who have been commissioned by Columbia to write music for the microphone. Dean Saylor, musical consultant of the Columbia Network, wrote the comments which he made, and the special musical arrangements were made by Amadeo De Filippi. Howard Barlow conducted the Columbia Symphony Orchestra. The Columbia Workshop, which is under the general direction of Irving Reese, was directed tonight by Davidson Taylor.
Far from the city, where the Lorax roams free, is the home of the magical truffula trees. In a place you will love, with things you'll adore, it's a magical spot. We call it the forest.
Everyone here needs the trees.
And who are you?
I'm the Lorax, guardian of the forest.
The forest is there for you to explore. So come once to see it, then come back lots more.
I just like hearing you say it.
Visit discovertheforest.org, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council, for that FCC obligation. We heard the Columbia Workshop scoring for radio, vocabulary of sound, with an original air date of the 7th of November, 1936. Interesting, a young Aaron Copland was part of that. He was, as they said, he was in the studio. The following year, 1937, he would write his book, What to Listen For in Music. And then 2 years after that, 1939 or 38, he would score Billy the Kid. He's considered the Dean of American music. But that's just always interesting. I like those kettle drums. You know what Christopher Cross says? Arthur, he does what he pleases. Yes, this is Arthur, and you are listening to 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Sticking with kind of a music theme this morning, I'm going to play Rocky Fortune. I believe this one's titled Some Cats Killed the Canary. This stars old Frank Sinatra. I've played one on the Grand Hour before, maybe a year and a half ago. Just the show developed for him. It was just interesting because he had Robin and the Seven Hoods. That had to start Peter Falk in the singing number for 1 minute and 36 seconds. I'm not able to come up with that one right now, so I thought go ahead and play old Frank Sinatra. A lot of people seem to like him. Thanks for this one. The original air date of Some Cats Killed the Canary, it's the 17th of November, 1953. Thanks.
Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. NBC presents Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
Hi. When I was a kid, a couple of maiden aunts made me practice the bull fiddle to strengthen my character. It didn't do much for my character because I hocked the fiddle and ran away from home. Every once in a while, though, I got a chance to pick up a couple of bucks playing with a small combo at a Polish wedding or a bar mitzvah. The last job I had was neither. It was more of a funeral. My own. Yeah?
Hey, Dad, I want to speak to Rocky Fortune.
You got him.
Bugsy Barton.
Well, hiya, Jazzbo.
Hi.
Where you been?
Me and the cats have bounced a little flea back called the Hotel Zanzibar. You dig that place?
I've been there. How's America's greatest bebop horn?
Gaining altitude, man. Gaining altitude.
Getting tall, huh?
Yeah, real high. You all looking for a little gainful employment?
You mean music?
Dad, I don't mean bricklaying.
Bugs, I ain't played the bass for 5 years. Also, my instrument is with Uncle. I hocked it for train fare.
Man, that don't signify. We'll scuffle up a bass for you.
How much and where?
The Zanzibar. $15 in the pad for the night.
See you in a half hour.
Solid, solid. Plant you now and dig you later.
Whatever happened to that line? I invest a subway token, and 20 minutes later, I am in a jungle room of the Hotel Zanzibar, which is a cheap three-story flea bag on Bleakman Street. On the bandstand is Bugsy Barton, there's 5 barrels of bop. Bugsy is a musician's musician, and the boys are playing strictly from Memphis. After the set, Bugsy comes over and sits down with me. This boy is 5 feet wide across the chest, and he doesn't know from his own strength.
Rock, boy. Give me some skin, man.
Easy, Bugs. You're breaking up the metacarpals. What's up?
My bass player's on the sauce. I need somebody to take his place tonight.
Well, I ain't much of a bass player, Bugs.
Well, that don't matter, man. All you gotta do is stand up there and wallop the Wurlitzer. I just want to cover the boy to keep the hotel manager from blowing his top.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Where's the fiddle?
You go up to Johnny's room, 212. Get his fiddle and come on down.
Johnny?
Johnny Lament, man. The best double bass you ever laid an eardrum on.
Yeah, of course. He used to play with Goodman, didn't he?
Oh, this Johnny's been all over town, Rock. Man, when he's sober, he can play all over that instrument. Hits every register but the cash register.
What's wrong?
Girl trouble. Used to have a little thrush called Evie Johnson. She and Johnny had a falling out, and he'd taken it pretty hard. Come on, man. You better hustle. We're on in 10 minutes.
I hopped the self-service elevator up to 2 and looked for room 212. It ain't very hard because it's the only room with a built-in trombone player.
Yes?
This Johnny Lament's room, baby?
What do you want?
I'm Rocky Fortune. I'm sitting in for Johnny till he comes in for a landing. Which won't be soon by the looks of him.
You still haven't said what you want.
Oh, pardon me. I need the fiddle.
Don't you have your own instrument?
Honey, don't give me a bad time. I need the fiddle.
Come in.
Thanks.
Hello, Sonny. Who's that?
Take it easy, Johnny.
Evie. Evie, you come back, huh? Is that you, Evie?
Oh, this kid's for Bellevue.
Evie.
Johnny, go back to sleep.
Put some more music on, baby. Play me something sad. If you see my baby, you send her home to me. If you see my baby, you send her home to me. Tell my baby I'm sad as I can be. Who's that cat?
Name's Rocky Fortune, Johnny. I'm sitting in with Bugsy and the boys tonight, and I need your fiddle.
Sure, man. Anything you say, man. Do you want a drink, man? At Dolores, honey, give this righteous cat a little drink.
Thanks. I don't touch it, John.
Say, man, you see my Evie any place around? See a little chick about so high with the softest blonde hair. You seen her, man?
Afraid not, Johnny.
The fiddle's in the closet, Rocky.
Thanks, baby. I didn't catch the name.
I didn't throw it. It's Dolores Kane. I'm Bugsy's new singer.
Pleased to meet you. Hey.
Yes?
What's the gun on the shelf for?
Oh, it's Johnny's. Don't worry. I already threw the bullets out the window.
Clever girl.
Thank you.
And pretty, too.
Thank you. And don't forget the bass fiddle.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Come in.
It's 11:10, Miss Kane.
Oh, write down, Mr. Quaid.
In case no one has informed you, Miss Kane, I pay you and Mr. Barton to put on a show in my club at 10:30. It is now 11:10.
I'm sorry, Mr. Quaid. We were just...
I can see what you were just. Is this drunken Paganini going to perform tonight?
Well, Johnny isn't feeling so good, Mr. Quaid, but Mr. Fortune here is going to take his place.
Fortune? I don't believe I've ever heard of him.
Rocky Fortune? Why, he's one of the greatest bass players in the business.
I'm paying for the greatest.
Rocky, tell Mr. Quaid how you and Dixie had him screaming for mercy at Lijas Hot in Paris last year.
Well, yeah, I don't want to brag, baby.
Oh, go on.
Well, you see, we was playing the dog watch from 12 to 4. And sudden, like, Dixie gets off on Japanese Sandman. Everybody said Dix was losing his lip, but that night he was blowing up a storm. I'm just playing along when up he comes, boogity-boogity, open horn, and every note looked like it was greased and stuffed. Pretty soon, the cats were jumping and pandemonium breaks loose. French bankers were tearing their clothes off. You know, it took 150 gendarmes to calm the joint down.
That's very interesting, Mr. Fortune, but the next show is due to start in 3 minutes, if you don't mind.
Me? I don't mind. See you later, Johnny.
Anything you say, man. You see my Evie down there, you tell her Johnny says come back here. Yeah? You tell her I heard Johnny's been to Weep City for her and he wants her back.
I shoulder the fiddle down to the jungle room just as Bugsy and the boys get off on Sweet Lorraine. We start off playing what the French call the In Time. We call it In a Closet. After a while, the joint starts jumping, and for the next 5 hours, I slap that bass until the gut turns black and blue. Also, my hand. Half the time, I'm in two different keys, but nobody cares. And the fans figure I'm another Eddie Safransky, because I'm playing notes that don't even exist. About 4 in the a.m., the whole deal builds to a crescendo till I think the top of my head's going to fly off. And then suddenly, we're playing 16 bars of Goodnight, Sweetheart, and it's all over, I think.
Okay, cut. That does it. Thanks, Rock.
Well, how did it go, pal?
Oh, I tell you, sweet and groovy like a 90-cent movie, man.
Yeah, what happens now?
You want to play again tomorrow? We got a room for you on the third floor if you need a pad for the night.
$15?
15.
You got it.
Solid. Here's a key.
Say, how's Johnny Lament?
Oh, still on his hip.
He's taking this thing kind of hard, isn't he? What happened to him?
Him and Evie had a big thing. Tonight she walked out, bag and baggage.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, it's dames for you. Invest heavy and come out light. See you in the AM.
You'll pardon the expression, but what time?
The boys stopped seeing double about 11. We rehearse at 12.
I lug the bull fiddle up to the third floor and head for my room. I don't get very far, however, because halfway down the hall I hear something which ain't music. Hey, what's going on in there? Open up! Open up!
No, no.
Take it easy, baby. Wait a minute. Just a minute. What's wrong here?
In the bedroom.
Before I have a look, would you mind putting down the knife?
Knife? I didn't even...
Unless that's ketchup on it, baby. Maybe you better tell me what's in that room.
It just isn't possible.
It never is. Pardon me while I take a look. Don't go away. I sprint for the bedroom, get the door halfway open, and I stop. There on the bed is the body of a beautiful little blonde. And one look tells it all. Some cat's killed a canary. All right, Dolores, let's have it.
This can't be.
Come on, baby, what happened here?
I finished singing my last number, and I had a drink at the bar. It made me sleepy, and I came up to the room and passed out. I woke up a minute ago. Eve was lying on the bed, and this knife was in my hand. Rocky, I didn't kill her. Honest, I didn't.
No, just to take it easy. If you didn't, who did?
I don't know. I swear to you, it happened just the way I said. When I saw her, I screamed and then...
Take it easy. Look, open your eyes.
What?
I said open your eyes. Look at me. Okay.
Well, what was that for?
Just checking, honey. Somebody slipped you a Mickey. Your pupils are contracted.
It was the drink. I know it.
You know why anybody would want to frame you for Eve Johnson's murder?
Well, why should anyone?
Somebody did, baby. Now, come on, we got to work fast. Whoever did this has probably phoned the gendarmes already.
What can we do?
I don't know. At 4 a.m., you... Wait a minute, listen. You go out and press the elevator button.
What are you going to do?
Get rid of the body. Now, get moving. Dolores holds the elevator while I carry Eve's body in. Then I tell her to hold the button until I can hustle down to the first floor. I hit the lobby just as my good friend, Detective Sergeant Hamilton J. Finger of Homicide, comes on like Buster's gang.
Pardon me, Sam.
Yes?
Homicide, we got a tip on a body in room 310.
Oh, there must be some mistake, Sergeant.
Well, well, my old cellmate, Hamilton Finger.
I mind a note. Is this one of your practical jokes, Fortune?
I don't know from what you're talking, Sarge.
Step over the elevator with me. We'll go upstairs, Rocky.
Anything you say. Look, what brings you here?
I ain't sure, but I think it's a corpse.
I jab the elevator button and we wait for the car. My pumper is playing footsie with my Adam's apple as the car comes down. And the door is open. And I nearly drop dead. The car is as empty as Ebbets Field in December. We ride up to room 310, which belongs to Dolores Kane. Hey, Sarge, what's it all about?
You'll find out.
Yes?
Open up, baby. Homicide.
Sergeant Finger, Miss Kane.
You've met.
Dolores sings for Bugsy. I've been sitting in. That's musician's talk.
You mind if I look around?
Help yourself. You mind if I ask you what you're looking for?
We got a phone call, said there was a dead woman in this room.
That isn't very flattering.
What's in there?
Take a look.
Empty.
I think somebody's been pulling your legs, Sergeant.
Both of them.
Where's the bedspread?
In the hamper.
Excuse me. I suppose this is nail polish.
How did you know?
Yogi. Mind if I take it down to the lab for analysis?
If you'll have it laundered.
Okay, what's in the closet?
Oh, that's a small dragon named Launcelot. Careful he doesn't bite you.
Funny.
Boo.
Okay, I'll have the bedspread analyzed for bloodstains. Now, don't go away, either one of you.
We wouldn't think of it. Nighty night, Sarge.
And no more practical jokes, you understand?
What did you do with it?
What?
The body.
It's in the elevator.
Not anymore, it ain't.
What do you mean?
It never made the first floor. The car was empty.
That's impossible.
Eve Johnson's body didn't walk out of that car, baby. Somebody lifted it.
But, well, that means somebody must have stopped the car on the second floor.
Correct. The next question is, who would want to steal a corpse?
What'll we do?
Well, if
Finger's going to find bloodstains on that spread, and when he does, he'll be back with some ticklish questions. And I got a hunch we better have the answers. Let's move. We start a room-to-room canvas of the second floor. Dolores takes one card, and I take the other. Result? A big, fat goose egg. I finish my card and go look for Dolores. She's gone, but from the sound of voices, I figure she stopped off to see how Johnny Lament is making out. I start to go in, but I change my mind.
Johnny, cut it out.
She's dead, ain't she? My little Evie's dead.
Oh, don't be crazy.
I ain't crazy, baby. Not anymore.
What makes you think she's dead?
I could see it in your eyes when I asked you about it.
Would it matter so much? She walked out on you, didn't she?
She'd come back if she was okay. I know Evie. Come on, Dolores. What happened to her?
How should I know?
You know, baby. You said you was gonna kill her.
You're out of your head.
She told me. She says, Johnny boy, Dolores is jealous of you, and she says if I don't stop seeing you, she'll kill me.
It's not true.
Come on, baby, I know you. We were married once, you and me, remember? Now let's have it. What'd you do to Eve?
Nothing.
That don't wash, baby. That just don't wash.
Johnny, stay away.
You're gonna tell me, honey, where's Evie? What'd you do to her?
Johnny, you're crazy drunk. Now get away.
You're gonna talk?
Johnny, no! Johnny,
talk!
No!
All right, hold it, John.
Get out of here.
Knock it off. You all right, baby? Not that I really care.
I'm all right.
Sit down, Jazzbo.
This your new boyfriend, baby? Because I don't like his face, and I think I changed.
Sit down.
Johnny.
He's all right. I had to belt him, and I ought to clip you, too.
I don't understand.
I heard it, baby. I got big ears. You didn't bother to tell me you were married to Johnny Lament, and you didn't bother to tell me you and Eve had a slight falling out.
I wanted you to help me. I was afraid.
You wanted a patsy, baby, and you got one. Only you're about to lose him, because Rocky boy's going to walk away from all this right down to the nearest police station.
Rocky, no.
All that bilge about how you were framed and me with my open mind. I got a hole in my head.
Rocky, it's not true.
Yeah, well, tell Dick the fun-loving Rover boy when he comes to. I'll leave his fiddle in the band room. So long, baby. And the next time you want a corpse moved, call the Seven Santini brothers. I don't belong to the right union. I put it up to my room as mad as a centipede with a hot foot and lugged the big bass fiddle down to the band room, which is right across the hall from Johnny Lament's room. The empty fiddle case is standing in the corner. I start to lay it down flat and it weighs about a ton. And even before it slips out of my hands, I know why. Holy smokes.
Okay, fly boy. Get him up high.
So you're the guy who was all busted up about losing his best girl.
Back against the wall.
A real nice guy. Kills his doll and tries to hang it on his ex-wife. You're a doll, Buster.
She found out I was pushing dope and threatened to go to the cops. They had to kill her.
Why, you crummy dope peddler. It's misfits like you to give honest musicians a bad name.
Don't run your mouth at me, Fortune. If you'd have kept out of it, you'd be all right.
You're going to have a tough time trying to get rid of two corpses, John boy. A fiddle case only holds one.
I'll worry about that. Turn around.
Sure, pal, anything you say. Only before I do, there's one thing I think you ought to know.
Yeah?
Dolores took the bullets out of your gun. Hello. Hello.
Yes, please.
Who is this?
The manager. What is it, please?
Listen, Quade, this is Rocky Fortune. I'm up in the band room, 215. Now, listen. Eve Johnson's body's up here in a bass fiddle case. And I got the cat that killed her. And get the cops and make it fast.
You say you've got the man who stabbed her?
Stretched out like a herring.
That's just fine, Fortune. Stay right there. I'll call the police.
Make it fast. I hear somebody coming now.
Don't worry. You'll be taken care of.
It takes about 2 seconds before lightning strikes. How did Quade know she was stabbed, and how did he know it was a man? Suddenly, little wheels start to spin around in my noodle. Quade is in on it. Sure he is. He's probably supplying Johnny Lament with the stuff. And what's more, he's undoubtedly on his way up here right now. I start to pick up Johnny Lament's .45 and remind myself that Dolores Kane has removed the bullets. A hand turns the doorknob, but it can't be Quade so soon. I just pray that one of the cats has come to get his instrument. The door opens. I freeze.
Hey, Dad. Put the thing down. You gone goony?
Bugsy. Brother, am I glad to see you.
Put down the heater, man. What's going on in here?
Take a look in that fiddle case.
Holy smokes. Eve.
Yeah, here's the little boy who did it.
Johnny?
Admitted it. I had to flatten him.
Well, you did real good.
Not good enough. Listen, Bugs. The manager's on his way up here right now, and unless I miss my guess, he's got heavy artillery.
Well, Quaid? Is he in on this?
He is now. I gotta get out of here.
Well, what you gonna do?
I got a sudden brainstorm. Look, help me get Eve Johnson's body out of this case. Come on, pal. Get with it. Come on.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Where to?
In the closet.
Yeah.
Attaboy. Now dump Laughing Boy into the bass drum.
Right. Now, open the door.
Yeah. Look, you think you can lift that case with me in it?
Are you kidding?
Attaboy, muscle man. Here goes.
All right, what you want me to do?
Now, look, you just walk out like you're on your way to a jam session. Uh-huh. Once I get past Quaid and his artillery, I'm all right.
Okay. Now, watch your hand. Here goes. How you doing?
Cut the lip dribble and get going before I get blue. The fiddle case fits me like a fatal disease, but I squint down and hold my breath, and I figure maybe we'll make it. Bugsy Boy picks me up like I weigh in at 3 pounds just as the door opens.
All right, Fortune, get your...
Hi, Mr. Quaid.
Oh, it's you.
You was expecting somebody else?
I was expecting Fortune. Did he get away?
Fortune? You mean the bass player.
You know who I mean, Muscle Brain. Did he get out?
You know me better than that, boss. I got Rocky Fortune right here. Inside the fiddle case.
So there I am. Smart? They don't come any smarter than old Rocco Fortunato, Jack. It never occurred to me that this hotel might be operating a narcotics dodge and that my pal Bugsy might be in on it. But I'm real tricky, I am. Yes, sirree. I outwit the crook by crawling into a bass fiddle case and letting him snap the catch on me. And there I hang like a cured ham, waiting to be boiled in hot fat.
What do we do with him, boss?
Let me out of here, you punk!
Get him out of here.
Why don't we just drop him down the air shaft? It'll look like an accident.
Don't be a jerk. Take him down to the river.
Anything you say, boss. Hey, Fortune, shut up. My, what a temper this cat has got.
Come on, Bugsy, don't waste any... Who's that?
Search me.
Open up.
Who is it?
Police.
Just a moment. Drop him out the window.
Right.
Open up.
So long, sucker.
Okay, open the door.
What's going on here?
I'd like to know, officer. We came in and found this musician knocked out on the floor.
Where's Fortune?
Fortune? I haven't seen him. Have you, Bugsy?
Fortune? Oh, not a hide. Nor a hair, either.
Well, I know he came in here to return the fiddle.
He must have left, then. Maybe he's in his room.
Yeah, yeah. He might have been here, but he left.
Come on, miss. We'll go up to his room.
Something wrong, officer?
Yeah. Fortune's wanted as an accessory to murder.
Hold it! Oh, no.
Rocky! What are you doing out there?
You won't believe this, Sergeant, but I just climbed out of a fiddle case. These hoodlums dropped me out of the window onto a fire escape one flight down.
What?
He's obviously crazy, probably drunk.
If I'm crazy, brother, then how about opening that closet door? Because I've had a hallucination that Eve Johnson's body's inside.
I'd like to oblige Fortune, but you see, I've got other plans.
Grab him!
Hold it, buddy. All right, don't move, either one of you.
I'm standing still.
Open the closet, Rocky.
Had enough for you, Sergeant?
Yeah. It'll do for the time being. All right, let's go, you two. Keep an eye on Dreamboat there.
Sure will. If he comes to, I'll belt him with a fiddle.
Let's go.
Phew, boy.
Are you all right, Rocky?
If I can ever straighten up, I'll be fine. What happened up here?
Well, the sergeant came back when he found out those were bloodstains, and I told him the whole story. We came down to look for you, and... Well, I guess you know the rest.
Uh-huh.
You sure you're all right, Rocky?
I'm fine, baby, but I was just thinking.
What?
What they would have said if that fire escape hadn't have been there.
What would they have said?
Man, dig that crazy bass fiddle.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose, fancy-free, and frequently unemployed young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
Tonight's cast included Jack Crucian, Gene Tatum, Tom Holland, Frank Gerstle, and Barney Phillips. Tonight's script was written by George Lefferts, and Andrew C. Love directed. This is Eddie King speaking. Now, to tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
No, good thing that fire escape was there. That was, you heard Rocky Fortune. I got a couple of different things on the title. I know I said Some Cats Killed the Canary. I think that was another AKA, but I saw one that says A Little Jazz Goes a Long Way to Murder. Either way, that was a sustained show, meaning it had no sponsorship. NBC just carried that on its own laurels, probably because of Frank Sinatra. My name's Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for listening.